What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and my co-host, Thomas Drantz, who of course also covers the team for The Athletic. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big show coming up today. Always exciting on a Wednesday, and it's a game day, no less, as well. We'll do the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal in a few minutes here. Jason Bukala joins us at 1, and just generally a lot to get into today. Always a highlight of the regular season calendar now. I mean, this is really only the second edition, but it's the Hughes Bowl today in Vancouver as the Canucks host Quinn Hughes' two brothers, Luke and Jack, and the New Jersey Devils at Rogers Arena. Very exciting to see.
It is very exciting. Always a good game, and the New Jersey Devils play fun, up-tempo hockey. Jacob Markstrom back in town. I assume he'll start against his former club. You'd hope so. But yeah, I mean, the Devils are an engaging team to watch. They play fun hockey, and Jack Hughes and Luke Hughes are a big part of the reason why. I mean, Jack especially,
yes,
height of his powers, you know, his ability to attack off the rush, kind of like I've always thought that his game is somewhere halfway between Taylor Hall and Patrick Kane.
All right.
And I always think that's a pretty fun mix of skills
for
a forward to have. And then, yeah, I mean, look, Quinn Hughes is on a totally different planet in terms of his level of play right now. I'd imagine he'll be excited to try and get it done, competing against his brothers. But I also know that these are challenging games for him, right? Because of the fact that usually he's rooting for him. Usually he's rooting for his brothers. You know, this is not your sort of more classic rivalry. These guys work really hard together, support one another, share best practices, right? Are invested in each other's development as players and pros, which is kind of a cool dynamic. So should be fun to watch tonight.
Yeah, it's a special night, no doubt about it, for the Hughes family. And as you said, it's not just that, kind of the novelty of it, right? And the experience for the brothers, but the Devils, good team, exciting team, and you know, another speedy, dangerous opponent for the Canucks to reckon with tonight. And obviously a very different style and how they get things done, right? They focus a lot more on the high quality chances and generating off the rush necessarily than Carolina does. But
although
still,
Carolina was
beat them off the rush,
beat
for
them
sure.
Off the rush,
but
yeah,
you know what I mean, right? It's more of the kind of your classic east-west passing, high-quality scoring chance focus from the Devils than you typically see from Carolina. But just in general, this is a strong team, and the depth on their blue line really stands out to me as well, right? A couple additions there over the summer. Brett Pesce, Brendan Dillon as well, local product. And you look at it, and you know, Luke Hughes and Brett Pesce are their third pairing. It's just like a lot of mobility, a lot of guys who can move and handle the puck on that blue line. And that obviously helps jumpstart the speedy forwards. So I think the Canucks, you know, as Rick Tocchet says, still trying to find their defensive identity and not just limit chances off the rush, but just in general, really be sharp and on their details, and it's going to be a test tonight.
And rush chances against haven't been an issue for them, even if it was against the Carolina Hurricanes. Like, when you look at the whole of this team's eight games so far, you know, I don't think they've been bludgeoned off the rush with any sort of regularity. You know, there's something about this team that just doesn't feel like it's clicked into gear yet. And so the fact that they've picked up points in 7 of 8, given that sense that I think we should have that, hey, this team has not come close to playing their best hockey yet, you know, it is, can be spun positively, right? On the other hand, I feel like the reaction around this team, right? The goalless streak whack-a-mole, the Thatcher Demko uncertainty, the endless cacophonous Elias Pettersson conversation, you know, suggests too that there's some like restlessness among this fan base in terms of how the team's talked about. And I think there's justification for that too, given like how feckless the power play has been. You know, the three big line items in terms of the Pettersson Demko uncertainty. Then of course, you know, yeah, okay, they've picked up points in 7 of 8. They've won 3 of 8 in regulation, right? So we're kind of at this like Rorschach test inflection point as Vancouver's schedule sort of turns to November. where, you know, we're still learning what this team is. We've got a lot more to see. I just think we have this sense that this team can play better hockey and hasn't necessarily found anything like the vibes that they enjoyed during last year's miracle season.
Yeah, we talked so much about like shooting percentage regression. What we're seeing right now is vibes regression. It was never going to live up to the vibes of this time last year. And I think you're right about some of that trepidation and that fear from the fan base, despite the fact that, you know, just objectively, if you're measuring how they're picking up points, they're off to a really good start, or at least a good start. And I think it's fair. Part of it is because there's just higher expectations for the team, right? Last year it was, hey, just get off to a decent start and try to make the playoffs, right? This year it's try to look like a cup contender. Now, you're not going to establish yourself as a bona fide cup contender in October, but you want to at least see that it's going in that direction as soon as possible in the season. And I think it's very fair to say, like, we have, I don't think we've seen this team play a statement game, an identity game, right? You could look at the second period against Pittsburgh and say, okay, that's what they're trying to get to. But that was one period. It wasn't the whole game. We're still waiting to see this team, what it can look like when it's firing on all cylinders. And obviously a big part of that is Elias Pettersson. Part of that is, you know, the defense pairings beyond Hughes and Hronek. Part of that is the power play. But I think it's almost a credit to the fan base that they're not just looking at, oh, hey, 11 points in 8 games, that's fine. They want to see the process look better. They want to see this team look really as fearsome as we think it could, given the talent and the personnel involved.
For sure. And I think that's why the power plays become the flashpoint, mm-hmm. right? Because that's like the most obvious distillation. I'd add this, right? I'm seeing a lot of people criticizing Rick Tocchet for the performance of the power play. By the way, I think that's fair, right? I'm not by any means trying to shield the reigning Jack Adams winner mm-hmm. from scrutiny. The power play hasn't been great. But I do think we need to reframe it, right? It's not that the power play has been like bad or gotten worse since Tocchet took the reins, and I know he's consulting more heavily with Yogi Shevkovsky. Obviously the Twins are involved, but fundamentally the Canucks are one of the few teams in the NHL that don't have a designated coach who has sort of the power play portfolio under their auspices or job description, however you want to put it. With what we've seen since Tocchet took over, or you know, a clearer sort of line of demarcation being Jason King's departure from the organization following that 2022-23 campaign, you know, it is basically the same thing. The Canucks have been average or like just outside the top 10. They were a ninth best power play unit in Jason King's 2 seasons, 11th since his departure, 23% versus 22.5%. No significant change. But I do think it's fair to point out that, like, the power play is the one area where Tocchet's coaching impact hasn't helped the team take a quantum step forward. So it is a lagging indicator, but not because it's been bad, but just because it hasn't improved like the rest of the
Well, last game. Season, right? Everything that Rick Tocchet touched turned to gold, with the exception of the power play. But everything else worked out so well.
Well,
so
even the power play did in the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah, it's true. But it stands out, right? Because we're so used to seeing Rick Tocchet have all the answers. And know, okay, hey, here's how there's an issue. Here's how we're going to fix it. And then, boom, it gets fixed. And I think we're all kind of waiting to see if and when that happens with the Canucks power play. All right, it's Wednesday. It is time, as always, at this time on a Wednesday, for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal, Donnie and Dolly, which you can check out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. And they join us now for the crossover. Don, Rick, how's it going?
Very well. Yogi's in charge of the power play now. Have I got that right? Shevkovsky?
Yeah.
In charge of the Canucks power play?
I don't think so. Not full time. I think it's still Tocchet with Yogi consulting on it, much like the Twins did last year.
Okay, I thought Tocchet said that he'd handed the reins over.
Yeah, I thought he.
Thomas, you might want to check on this.
Why don't you check on that, Thomas?
I will, but I'm pretty confident I'm right, boys. So
it's a real change.
Oh,
what else is new? Like, I will check.
Trance
is confident that he's right.
Oh, I will check on the thing you're wrong about, though, boys. Just want you to know.
Okay.
Oh boy.
Hey, listen. A Donnie and Dolly hat. Okay. It is coming your way, if indeed you're right, but we get your pumpkin. if we're right.
The hard work of Cam Bear. Although I don't know if you're going to want that pumpkin in like a couple days time, Donnie. It's going to be pretty rough by tomorrow.
I don't know if you want the hat.
Cam Bear really made that?
He did. Yeah.
He really carved it.
He's been in here propping it up with toothpicks and stuff. I know, multi-talented. Not just a program director.
Very impressive. Scott, very impressive.
Artsy.
Well, if he's your boss, he probably has nothing else to do.
Apparently, this place runs itself. He's got time to sit here and carve pumpkins.
You guys run the station. Come on.
Oh, yeah. So we were just kind of talking. I mean, obviously, it's the Hughes Bowl at Rogers Arena tonight. You know, the Canucks, 11 points through their first eight games. But, you know, I don't know if you guys have sensed this. That's a good mark, 11 points in eight games. But it still feels like the fans and I think the team itself is kind of not entirely satisfied, that they're wanting more, that the vibes don't quite seem right so far this season through the Canucks. Are you guys getting that same sense that we are?
Well, Rick Tocchet, along with talking about Yogi and the power play, he mentioned that the one thing that really sticks in his craw, among other things, but team-wise, they haven't been great at home in terms of their record anyway. And, you know, the three shootout/overtime losses. So, yeah, on the road, pretty good against some inferior inferior teams. But at home, I thought that game with Carolina was entertaining, mostly because I was blown away by Carolina and their speed. That was really, really impressive. But the results haven't been there at home, especially when you talk about blowing late leads on home ice, which you're not supposed to do. So there's definitely a level or two to get to. And you can tell when you hear him talk after a game, you can tell that he feels that there's a long way to go with this group.
Yeah, and that's the great thing you love about Tocchet. After a win, he never lets you get complacent. He never says, even after the biggest win of the year, he'll say, we got to be better. We got to be better. He never lets this group get complacent. They are 1-0-3 at home, so Donnie's correct about the home record. But that Carolina team was so fun to watch. I know for 50 minutes they controlled everything, but their transition game, the way they went up the ice on Vancouver mistakes, two times defensemen pinched, they went up the ice real quick, they scored, Desharnais gives the puck away at center, and they turn around, transition up the ice, 3-on-2s, 2-on-1s. Boy, that Carolina team was really fun to watch. If the Canucks have said this, management-wise, two summers in a row. They've said, two summers in a row, we got to get faster.
Yeah.
And now you know why. You see teams like Carolina, and you think, man, we got a long way to go before we get our team speed to where they are.
What's amazing, too, is that was a fun team to watch is not something that's often been said about Rod Brind'Amour's Carolina Hurricanes. That team looks like they might have an extra offensive gear this season, which is a scary thought for the other contenders in the Eastern Conference. Gentlemen, as much as we are praising what we saw from Carolina on Monday, I mean, Kevin Lankinen holds the Canucks in that game. Where would this team be, Rick, without Lankinen in net?
It's a great question. They'd be in a whole lot of trouble because at that time when they were looking for goaltenders, here's the budget the Canucks had, $850, right? Mm-hmm. The only other way to get a goaltender at that time was a trade. And then, okay, now we got to give up assets to get a goaltender we want. The only reason Kevin Lankinen was available, guys, is because the team, and there was a handful of teams after him. Vancouver wasn't the only team. There were teams like Colorado poking around. But the only problem was that teams had told the agent, we will get Kevin Lankinen if we can make a trade, if we can free up cap space. And there were teams that were saying our LTIR situation is holding us back. Nobody wants to go on LTIR way before the season. So there was issues why he was available. The timing was great. The Canucks' persistence was great. They outweighed the agent. They did a great job in getting this guy. But there's something that Tocchet said yesterday that just tells you about the character of Lankinen. After the Carolina game, he came in early and he started talking with the coaches, video work with the goalie coach. You know what? The guy played a great game last night, got the Canucks a point when they probably didn't deserve one, and he's in next morning early doing video work with the goalie coach. This guy was a really good find by the Canucks. They didn't have a ton of options at the time. They stuck in there, and they never gave up on giving the guy, and they're paying dividends right now.
Yeah, and the thing he does that, and you know this, Thomas, that Rick Tocchet does every time Lankinen plays, especially after they win, talks about his puck handling.
Yes,
and
yes.
And people forget what a good puck handler Kirk McLean was back in the day. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many goaltenders the Canucks have had that can handle the puck that well since then, but Lankinen's pretty good at that, and you can tell that Tocchet really appreciates that extra dimension that Lankinen hands out. And hats off to Canucks management. We don't always do that on this show, but you know, to get Lankinen and then
so
Brandstrom
negative, you
as
guys.
Well.
Always, yeah. Always slamming management on your show.
Deals. Well, Rick is anyway. No. Deals that I think most people just kind of, you know, glossed over when they were made. Like, okay, the Pullman deal, and you got to take Brandstrom, and he hasn't worked out. He's not that big. They look like really solid pickups.
Yep, they do.
Yeah, and Brandstrom's interesting too, because it didn't seem like he was really in their immediate plans, and then the forward situation, yeah, he gets a chance, and now I think it's going to be really difficult to take him out, even when Forbort's ready to go. I did just on the goaltending situation, it looks like Archer Shelovs is going to get the start tonight, and you know, I don't want to put too much pressure on him, but it does feel like a pretty important start, given how Lankinen ran with the opportunity, how Shelov's first couple of starts went, and now this is a dangerous, attacking New Jersey team that he's getting in against, and I'm sure as happy as you are with Lankinen, you would love to be in a spot where you're confident with both goalies, where you can have the split a little bit more even. And I think this is a big one tonight for Shelovs to kind of prove that, hey, this should be more of an even split. I should still get my fair share of starts here, too.
What a pleasant problem for the Canucks. And who would have guessed this, that you know they bring in Lankinen at his price tag and seems to be taking the job away from Artur Shelovs. Interesting tonight that he plays. When I was looking at the schedule, I was thinking, okay, you know, Lankinen played well. I know they lost, but played well against Carolina. Four games before that, four wins before that. I just assume it would be Lankinen tonight, Rick. Yep. And then, you know, they play a weak San Jose. By the way, did you see that crowd in San Jose last night?
10,000 last night.
A weak San Jose team on Saturday, and that would be Shelovs' start. But he goes with Archer Shelovs tonight.
Well, you could have given Shelovs a start Saturday in San Jose or Tuesday in Anaheim, but the problem is he's already had 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago was his last start. You got to get the guy a start. You could have played him San Jose. Anaheim's coming up. They got a pretty easy schedule that way. But you know what? Here's the great thing for the Canucks. No matter when Demko comes back, these two guys, they're holding the fort. Right? They're holding the fort, and you can't say on many nights goaltending's been an issue for the Canucks. And the best news this week was Tocchet saying yesterday that Demko's had four straight days, really good days, right? I told you guys that I heard he was making progress last week and that he had good days last week as well. Tocchet said this week as well, last four. Would it surprise anybody if Demko's back in 2 or 3 weeks? I don't think so. I think, let's see where it goes. Here's the great thing about Demko. Nobody's got an end date. It really is week to week, and we just got to wait. But it looks like there's some positivity there with Demko.
Is there, though? Because it was the exact same tone that the club had in September, Rick. I mean, and what happened in the intervening month? Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not feeling a lot of positivity given the sort of lack of progress in the team's statements about the player. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense because we've been doing this since August, mid-August, right?
Yep.
Mid-August is when we found out that Demko, his rehab has gone
when I called you on my
slower,
bike.
Way slower. bike.
Yeah, I called you on my bike.
What do you mean?
I was on my way back from the pool.
Obviously didn't register with Rick that you were on your bike.
Yeah, we're sorting through it in mid-August.
I do not remember.
Biking and swimming. Biking and swimming.
Let me put it to you this way nicely. I don't remember any time Thomas calls me. And we do talk quite a bit. We do call.
You flush
anyways,
it. You flush it as soon as it's done.
I was on my bike.
Thomas, what kind of bike? Mountain bike?
No.
What kind of bike? Mountain bike?
It's a city bike. Don't get distracted, Rick.
One of those old fashioned ones
with
the big wheel.
I like really small bikes. Little bikes only. It was a mini bike.
10 speed or
like a circus clown.
BMX? BMX? Thomas? Anyways.
7 speed.
Lost my train of thought.
Demko.
No, I still forgot. We've been.
You know what? I forgot too.
I got it. Look, at mid-August is when we heard first.
About Thomas riding a bike.
We first heard.
I was riding my bike when we heard.
Donnie, will you let me? See, now Donnie's not letting me finish. Mid-August is when we first heard that, look, it's going slow. And he might not be ready for training camp or preseason games. And now look at guys. September's passed. October's passed. And guys, we're into November here in a couple of days. And this guy's still not ready, right? So it's – and if you go back to the Nashville game where he got hurt, what are we, 7-8 months into this now?
Yeah.
You know, and before that, he didn't play for 2 months and he came back in the one game. Like, this guy has not legit played a game in a long super time. But I will tell you, Thomas, I am hearing, just like Tockett, there is positivity there. And I am
hope
hearing,
Tockett's hearing it.
Yeah. And the way Tockett said it was 4 really good days. Like I get you, Thomas. They keep saying he's around the corner and he never shows up.
Can I just say something here? I have a friend who's a soccer player, an old soccer player. And believe it or not, he has had this popliteus muscle.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Issue.
And he says it is really, but maybe we should get him on the
show. How long was he out?
He says it still bothers him.
There you go.
It's in behind the knee, and it just, and of course, he's not getting the rehab that Thatcher Demko is. Yeah. But he says it's really, really painful.
And
that pain in behind, and he's older now and arthritis and all that stuff. But he said he had it then, and he's not sure what's bothering him now. Is it arthritis or the popliteus? Because it's very similar pain. And he says it is really tough to deal with.
And Thomas, quickly, let me get this in. We don't have another goaltender who had this where he was out 6 to 9 months.
Who's we, by the way?
No, I'm just saying we don't have a comparison. We don't have a comparable to, let's say, we don't have a comparable that says that another goaltender had this and they were out 6 to 9 months. We don't have any sort of comparable to another goaltender.
My soccer friend.
Yeah. So there we go. How long was your soccer friend out?
He's still bothered by it.
Yeah,
still decades.
Decades.
Rick, your point about the positivity, I mean, it's good to hear, but I think it was either last week or the week before with you when we were talking, you know, the problem has been he hasn't been able to ramp up.
They keep saying.
Right? So I think until he gets beyond, he's had some good days in a row, and we see that next step, I think it's hard to really get excited about it, right? Yep. Until he takes those next steps here.
Go ahead. I'm curious to get your gentleman's take on this, because the Canucks have mostly played pretty well, right? They have points in 7 of their 8 games played, and yet there's something about the conversation around this team. You know, whether it's the sort of constant focus on Pettersson or the Demko uncertainty or sort of the goalless streak whack-a-mole that has sort of hit Jake DeBrusk now this week, where it just feels like there's some lingering like concern or something in the market. Maybe it's a reaction to higher expectations. Maybe it's that the team just, you know, for all the good results hasn't quite cracked into gear yet. But what's your take on why it feels like the conversation around this team is almost one shaded by disappointment, despite the fact that they've actually picked up points at a pretty high clip?
I think it's what you just talked about, and that's the higher expectations. If this was 2, maybe even just 1 year ago, let's say 2, I think people would be pretty happy with what they've seen so far. But the expectations are higher, given the 109 points last year, what they did in the playoffs, coming within a win of knocking off the Oilers. There's just another level, and I actually think it's a positive sign that I don't think, and nobody thinks, I'm sure Jamie and Thomas, you feel the same way. I don't think they've played their best yet, but they've got a point, as you mentioned, Thomas, in 7 of their last 8 games. That's a positive, but having said all of that, you can tell just by talking – post-game gatherings, and they're always so informative. I just love listening to him talking, even after practices, that he feels this team can get way better. And, hey, look who's missing, right? You know, Joshua, Demko, Pettersson isn't there yet. DeBrusk isn't there yet. There's definitely another level to get to, but I think if you want to call it disappointment, it starts with the higher expectations, which aren't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, and so where were we 13 months ago? The president of this hockey club said we're only going to make the playoffs if everything goes right.
Yeah.
Right. Then they start out 10-2-1, and so 13 months ago, no one had any expectations in this market for this hockey club. Most people, most media fans, picked them not to make the playoffs. Now they go one game away from the Western Conference final, and guess what? Donnie's right. The expectations are high. They're much, much bigger, but they lost some key components. I still think the Zadorov, I'm looking at the third pair. I know you guys are talking about Brännström, but Desharnais is going to be a healthy scratch again tonight, guys. I don't think you can't sign guys in today's NHL and say they're going to be projects at the NHL level. Projects are in the American League in Abbotsford. And this guy's clearly a project. Yep, they committed $2 million to him, and now he's going to be healthy scratch tonight for the second time.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between like a Daniel Sprong project, right, where it's 1 year below a million, and 2 years, $2 million for Desharnais. Like, I agree with you, Rick. That's pretty rich for a project, and I get it. You know, we talked yesterday, Drance, and look, he's a big right shot defenseman. Those guys are expensive, but you also look at it, and they're having so many problems moving the puck with those two bottom pairs. Desharnais in and out of the lineup, it kind of feels like it's only a matter of time before they try to swing a trade and get somebody in who can help them move the puck a little bit better. Because I don't know if the Desharnais project is going to turn around quickly enough here to solve that issue for the team.
See, yeah,
I don't know how quick they thought it was going to be. Sorry, Thomas.
Please, go
ahead.
Go ahead. No, you.
Well, I was just going to say, and we talked about this on the show today, when it comes to Desharnais, I think he is. I think they acquired him, and they knew he had a long way to go in terms of improving in order to become a decent National Hockey League player, that there is some experimentation here and that he is somewhat of a project in that. Look who's on their coaching staff. You know, Adam Foote and Sergei Gonchar. And if ever there was a team with a couple of coaches who could help somebody like him, like Desharnais, reach his potential, it's his team. So I think there's somewhat of a project status with him. But last game was tough.
Yeah.
And I just add, like, I do think that when you're a 6'7" right-handed defenseman, 2 times 2 is the equivalent of 1 times 8 for a scoring forward.
Yeah.
Like that, a scoring winger, excuse me, right? Like, it's the same bet. It's just that 6'7" right-handed defenders are going to come at a premium cost. So we'll see. He'd seemed to stabilize his game playing with Brännström, I thought. But obviously, that was a little bit of a setback again on Monday against Carolina. Rick, just before we let you guys go, are you hearing anything about the Canucks looking out there for options on the blue line?
Yeah, that's out there, and hearing as well. But again, so what do you do now? Like, are you looking for a top four defenseman in the second pair, or are you looking for? A guy in the third pair on the right side who's an everyday NHL player.
I think you'd be looking for both, going in and out of the lineup with.
They're going to be hunting.
I think much of the season for a top four upgrade, but
second pair guy. Yeah.
But I do think ultimately, given the demand around the league for players that match that description, and how few teams are actually willing to sell them, I do think, you know, if we see this team swing a quicker deal, like in November, the way they have in consecutive seasons, by the way, Zadorov last year, Ethan Bear the year prior, I do think they might be relegated to having to shop in that sort of like reclamation upside bet bin, as opposed to bringing in a more established guy, just because. I mean, you might have thought like, hey, Mackenzie Weegar and Rasmus Andersson in Calgary. Well, Calgary's playing pretty decent hockey. And, you know, you might have thought, hey, maybe St. Louis. Well, St. Louis is playing pretty decent hockey. So it's going to take some time to shake out here. Meanwhile, just about every team in the league is looking for a right-handed top four defenseman, as usual.
No kidding.
Business as usual.
As usual. But the Canucks did something last year, and Jim Rutherford's got a history of doing this. He gets ahead of it, right? He targets a guy, gets ahead of it, gets aggressive. But again, so the Canucks had no first or second round draft pick this past summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you go through that again? Can you keep giving away first seconds and then say the cupboards are bare in 3 or 4 years? Like, I mean, are we giving up another first round pick?
I think the prices are going to be extremely high. I think you absolutely can if they think it's going to help them win the Stanley Cup. I'm not even saying it's the right move necessarily, but everything we've seen from Jim Rutherford says he has no problem doing that, right?
Les Snead stuff, right?
Yeah.
All right. Now, we really can't let you go, Rick, before we find out. Have you stocked up on normal size bananas since we last talked?
Donnie, what did I have today? Yeah, I had a good one today. Big size. Well, hold on a second.
Well, when you hold it with the peel like that, yeah. That looks identical to the one last week that you were saying was too small.
No, this one is
it. It is the same one.
No, it's big. No, this one's big. This one's big. It was a big one. I like the big ones.
A magnum banana.
Stop right there.
All right. Time to let everyone go before we all get fired. Thanks for doing this, fellas. Again, it's Don Taylor, Rick Dhaliwal. From Donnie
Dhaliwal. Get on your bike, Thomas. Get on your bike.
I'll give you a call, buddy. Thomas. You can check him out Monday to Friday on Check TV, 10 to noon, and they join us here for the crossover every Wednesday.
I called him on my bike.
I don't know why you would expect him to remember that detail, though.
Well, because he called me. And I picked up and I said, I'm on my bike.
And then did you have the conversation?
And then we had a conversation.
Yeah, I wouldn't remember that. Well, I don't know. Unless you were like really huffing and puffing, I guess.
It was a pretty big, I guess, you know what? I think I only remember it because, you know, we'd both heard pretty concerning updates about Demko, right? So it was like a pretty significant conversation in my mind. And then I had to take
a significant bike ride.
It was a significant bike ride. Yeah.
A pivotal bike ride.
And then I went home and I took a day, like I was off that week. I took the day back and got to work.
There you go.
And I told him I was on my bike. I told him I was on my bike.
Riding your bike. Good for the knees.
He usually remembers where we are when we chat.
That shocks me. That does not seem like the thing Dhaliwal would normally remember.
I'm not kidding. He'll index things by like, remember that time you called me on my walk? And I'm like, twice a week, man? I don't know. So I thought he'd remember I was on my bike.
All right, lots more to get into today. We'll take a break. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet in the next segment here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintech Studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. If you want to get the full visual crossover experience, it'll be up on TikTok soon. Dom, how's the one from last week? Is it doing numbers on TikTok? Has it gone viral on TikTok?
Yes.
Yeah? Wow.
It's like us and the weird Costco kids. Like
Jamie Dodd and Big Justice. The Rizzler?
Yeah.
Us and
the Rizzler.
I'm more of a Big Justice guy, but yeah.
Okay, whatever you say.
Who in the office is the Rizzler?
I think it's you, buddy.
No. I'm too large to be the Rizzler.
Isn't that a part of his thing? He's large?
He's a toddler. He's a kid.
He's large for his age.
Sure, yes.
Yeah, but that's only because he eats 800 calorie cookies at Costco.
Exactly. You're a Costco guy, right, Dom?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. See, it's all adding up.
I will say, Dom, you definitely are the most likely person in the office to wear a ton of Kirkland.
Yes, I do love a good Kirkland sweater.
It's true. So Kirkland swag. Loves cookies.
Mm-hmm. What else? I don't know. I've exhausted my knowledge of the Rizzler.
A mascot
for all of us?
You think I'm mascot?
Uses TikTok.
You're the mascot.
Uses TikTok. Yep.
Yeah. There you
These
go.
Are such baseline things.
Dom is the Rizzler of Sportsnet 650.
Man.
Likes to dance with his family. Father aspires to be a pro wrestler.
All right. Okay.
Rizzler, Dom, Shermatti.
Let's move on here. It is, of course, the Canucks game day. 7:30 start time at Rogers Arena for the Canucks and the Devils.
You must love that, Thomas, hey?
What?
Late starts? You love your late night hockey.
I you know what? I despise a 7:30 start.
What?
I despise it. That extra half hour is unnecessary. I waste it. I don't find myself be productive during it. I find it deeply, I don't like it. I don't want a game that starts at 7:15. What I want is a game that starts at 10 p.m. local time that is out of market. What I want is like them to add,
a game that starts late that you don't have to be involved in, that you don't have to work,
that I don't have to be at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, like, if you gave me a 10 p.m. game that I had to cover, like, yeah, that would suck. I would hate that. No. 7 p.m. local is the game I want to attend. I just want there to be hockey on later at night after I'm done. That's what I want.
We need to put a team in Hawaii, is what you're saying.
100%.
I don't hate the 7:30, but the only thing I don't like is when it's like a secret 7:47 puck drop. Well, you know what I mean?
So the NHL,
that in general, I don't like. And also when it's 7 and it's like, oh, well, we're not dropping the puck till 7:18. It's like, why? Why are we doing this?
There's a few really standard things that the NHL should do to massively improve the viewer experience that are like the simplest things on the planet, and they don't do it. So every game, people might not know this, every game there is what's called a timesheet that game operations from every building around the league sends to the NHL,
mm-hmm.
and that is like formally approved. And the timesheet includes things like when warm-up starts, when the anthem goes, the 30-second re-warm-up after the anthem, blah, blah, blah. And for any regionally broadcast game, puck drop is 7 minutes after whatever the league
lists. The stated time.
So yeah. 7 o'clock game, 7:07 puck drop. Except for national games. For national games, it's often 15 minutes. And then obviously there's like ceremonial mm-hmm. games and other things where you have more stuff, more festivities surrounding puck drop. And in that, those instances, you can get later and later and later. List the time the game begins. List the time the game begins. List if the puck drops at 7:07, list it at 7:07. Yeah. If you list it at 7, drop the puck. There's no other league that does it this way. And it's like a completely cosmetic, simple change that would have zero impact on anybody involved in actually playing the games, anyone involved in actually putting on the show. It would just be better for fans to actually have a sense of when the game starts. Now, I think fans do understand, like, yeah, it's going to be like 5 minutes. I got time. Like,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Why not just list it? Why not just list it accurately?
Especially for the ones where it is different, right? Which fans are, like, I think sometimes a lot of people expect it to be 7:07 or whatever, and then it's 7:15, and they don't know
totally.
That. And it's just it's a minor thing, but it's a needless annoyance.
Tell fans openly when the game begins. That's a really simple change that the league could make to make things better for fans. Here's another one. I got another one
Okay,
for
wow.
NHL teams, especially in a world where independent media companies are increasingly reluctant to commit the budget necessary to travel reporters mm-hmm. with the team, and in which some teams, like the Vancouver Canucks, have made the determination that their fans don't actually care at all about the lineup and that the club media should, in fact, hide whatever the lineup is at any practice or morning skate at which the independent media is not present, right? In this world, the NHL should require, in very simple fashion and in line with, again, every other pro sports league, that a team publish practice attendance and lineup following absolutely every time the team skates. Like, we are not going to be able to accurately track how teams are skating going forward without this tool. And if you want to grow fantasy engagement around the sport, gambling engagement around the sport, the fan experience, the conversation around teams, you're going to need to set up a way for teams to be transparent about what their lineup looks like and what it's trending to look like in various games. A simple disclosure
with a practice report and a morning skate report that goes out every time the team steps onto the ice as a group, bare minimum, should be installed yesterday. Simple league requirement. Fine if teams don't comply. Get it done. There's no reason to permit this to be like a state secret when you're an entertainment product. Like, get it together. It's crazy that the league does nothing like this.
You got any more?
Yes.
Whoa, all right. This guy's on a roll.
Pool reporters should be permitted to interview the on-ice officials after every game. I know that this has become a common refrain from my colleagues, but it's largely because this was me hammering the table on it for years, because every other league does it. Every other league does it, and with the state of NHL officiating, which I actually think has been pretty good in the early going, I feel like the referee conversation hasn't really been happening too often.
No.
Which is a good sign. But yeah, I mean, just create that layer of transparency, create that layer to which officials missing calls are given the opportunity to explain what they saw, to just enhance that sense that this is all above board and legitimate, which, by the way, it completely is. But so often fan bases in the NHL are convinced that the officials are out to get them. And I think it's a situation that's aided by the inscrutability of the on-ice officials, the fact that they never have to answer for what's actually occurring. I actually think does NHL officials a disservice, because oftentimes, like, yeah, oh man, I missed that one. I apologize to the player and the referee afterwards. Those things happen. It was a bang bang play. I think people, I hope that people are adult enough to understand that. And I think they are for the most part.
Sorry, I made the,
you tuned out.
I made the cardinal sin of setting you up to keep going after the last one. So I'm not going to do that this time.
These are really simple things, though. Like,
I'm going to interrupt you here.
It is wild. Like, it is massively out of step with the basic ways that a contemporary pro sports league should function that the NHL does not have those apparatus in place.
All right, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, I already started tonight.
Just his turn? Like, is it time to get back in there? Or is...
Well, you know, Lanx has played, I don't know, 5-6 in a row. You know, maybe he's a little tired, but I think Artie's got to get in there.
You think you like the challenge for him too? I mean, he showed you in the postseason what he can do already, and he goes up against a team tonight that's pretty good in track meets, and he sure's having a great start.
Artie did a great job for us last year. He's had a start. First start was just okay. His second start wasn't that bad, so, I mean, it's not a big deal. He's played a lot of good hockey for us.
You suggested the other night that maybe some changes to the power play is coming. What can we expect to see differently?
Well, I think it's more a couple of little things technically or structurally, not much. It's more the mental aspect, so we worked on that yesterday.
Rick, how much of a puzzle is Elias Pettersson, the way that his play has been? And, you know, you look at the last few years, his shot attempts have gone down. He used to be a guy who could shoot the puck, and now he seems to be passing up on shots. Last year, he kept on talking about getting to skate more, moving his feet. We're hearing it again this year. How are you trying to solve it, and what's happening?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, everybody wants this one-timer. It's not there because people are on you. You got to move your feet. You start with that, you know, and I think he has moved his feet on some games where he's had some opportunities. I thought the Chicago game, the power play, we scored those two goals because of him. He went from the flank right to the net. Two guys went to the net. Millsy got a goal, somebody else, because of that. Sometimes if they overplay somebody in front, then he'll have his one-timer. So it's game to game. You know, I don't know what the other PK is going to do sometimes, and you just got to react off the structure of the other team.
Is he a kind of guy that you have to bolster his confidence? He used to be so confident with the puck, and you haven't seen that look from him.
Yeah, confidence is watching video, practicing hard, all those sort of things that he's trying to do, and spend a lot of time with different coaches, and then you just got to apply it.
It's been a while since you've been dominant. Can you sometimes forget how to be dominant?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of good teams out there, you know. It's, I mean, we're still trying to find our way, but... We got one regular season loss in, was it, 9 games. So we're doing some good stuff. This is a resilient team. You know, like even last year, we're down two. We always come back. I shouldn't say always come back, but we have the resiliency to do that. So I'm really proud of these guys, how they do it. Now, is there stuff that we got to work on? Yeah. You know, the middle of the ice, we talk about body position and all that sort of stuff. But in the, you know, when you're winning games or getting points, when you're making mistakes, that's a good thing. We just got to recognize we're making the mistakes.
Sorry, I was talking specifically about Petey, just following up Jason.
Oh, sorry, about...
Right, just when sometimes when you haven't been dominant in a long time, it's been about half a season now, can you sometimes forget how to be dominant?
Yeah, I mean, you look at old video, you think of different ways to do it. Confidence, you know, every try to give you confidence, but it also has to be within yourself. And I think that's... But that's every player. I mean, everybody goes through bad stretches and... You know, sometimes you just got to wake up in the morning, roll your sleeves up, and say, "Hey, I'm going to stop it." And you know, that's really what it comes down to.
Have you seen enough of that from
pockets of it? Yeah, yeah.
With the Hughes family reunion tonight, I know you've affectionately called Quinn a hockey nerd.
Yeah.
But you found out at the awards last year when Luke picked your brain that how much it's ingrained in the entire family, how much of a admiration you have. It's not just Quinn; it's Luke, it's Jack,
yeah.
It's the parents, as kind of being emblematic of what.
Yeah, it's the family. I think what I respect about their family, you know, and you talk about Luca, that they're always looking to push the envelope. You know, a couple of years ago, you know, Hughes didn't have the shot and this and that. He worked senselessly on his shot, like just every day in the summer the last couple of years. And now he's got one of the best shots on our team. Like he can deliver at any angle. He's got a one-timer now. So that's just hard work, and that's what he's done. And I can't speak for the other kids, but obviously they're great. But I know our guy here, Quinn's he's obsessed to get better.
Quinn had always measured himself, saying you got to get to the playoffs to prove what kind of a defenseman and teammate you are. He took some wicked licks in that Nashville series and sucked it up and played through it. What did that say about that type of leadership?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he got banged up, got up. But that's just playoff hockey. He knows that, and he got a taste of it. Now he wants more. Like, you know, if you... He doesn't want to talk about playoffs now, but he does. He wants another kick at it.
Rick, when you talk about the staples and the process, where is this team in terms of where you want it to be?
Yeah, I think it's getting closer. You know, I talked to the team yesterday. When you struggle a little bit, or certain guys struggle, you always go back to your game plan and the staples, and I think that's the best thing to rely on, your team. And there's some good stuff this year, but obviously we haven't played the six that we want. We're still trying to search it. But I haven't said it a lot this year, but I think we definitely have to go back to our staples. That's the fabric and identity of our team.
How much of a factor is it having seven new faces in the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, you look around the league, the new team, new players. It's different. Some guys have different systems. Trying to get used to a guy, like maybe the team you're on before does this. Now we do this. So there's a lot of it. You gotta let that chemistry happen. So I think it's. But that's what I mean. I'm just seeing a little bit more of that happening better. I mean, obviously we're not going at a huge pace because it's so early in the season. But I think we're chipping away at it.
You talked about getting points, right? And is there a sense of, maybe a false sense of security? Maybe not so much with your veterans, the guys that know what it takes, what you want, but maybe with the newcomers. And what I mean by that, you're picking up points, but maybe you're not following the process to pick up those points. And sooner or later, that catches up to you.
We've all been told, they all know. It's been the message loud, not just for me, other coaches, and other players. So it's not, you know, there's no... false sense of security here, that we know we have to play better, but also too, you know, we got to give these guys credit too. We're getting points, so you know, you got to try to find that sweet spot.
The power play is running great. What does it look like?
Well, great question. To me, the intensity, coming up with loose pucks, you know, sticking to the game plan, and then especially in the third period when you have a team on the ropes, just have that killer instinct. You know, being able to, you know, you beat pressure, take it to the hole. If that's the play, we should have three guys around the net when you take it to the hole, not one guy in their spot looking for a one-timer. I mean, everybody wants one-timers. Everybody wants their shot. That might not happen sometimes. It is you play teams that are really good penalty kill guys, and so there might be just a good old-fashioned take it to the net. You might hit a backdoor play, or you might make a nice play. These guys, the goals they've scored, they've made some nice plays. But look at Millsy's going Chicago. Shot off the boards in the net, guy in front. You got to have a lot of those goals, especially, you know, and I hate bringing up the playoffs. The playoffs, those are the type of goals, so why not start now?
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet weighing in on his team before they take on
the New Jersey Devils and the Hughes brothers tonight. And we'll talk more about that game with our next guest and also a little bit later on in the whiteboard. But we're up against it, so we'll take a break. Jason Bukala joins us on the other side to talk about the Canucks and some Canucks prospects as well that Bukala has been scouting and working on. So looking forward to that coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Think that you're vile.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Very pleased, as always, on a Wednesday to be joined by our next guest here. He is part of Sportsnet's NHL coverage, a former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He is Jason Bukala. Books, what's going on, man?
Not too much, fellas. Just, you know, doing some Canucks prospect stuff today. You guys, not because it's Wednesday, just because that's how the calendar fell. And working through some of that. And, of course, keeping my left eye on this fascinating election process that's going on south of the border, which is pure entertainment in itself, for sure.
That's definitely one way of putting it, for sure. And it is entertaining. No argument there. And we'll get into the prospect stuff in a second here. But just, you know, looking at the NHL team, we kind of started off the show by saying, you know, they're racking up points at a decent clip here, right? Only one regulation loss through their first eight games. But something also just feels a little bit off. And I think we've heard that from Rick Tocchet. The fan base here senses it a little bit. We haven't really started to see what this team's going to be able to do or should be able to do when they're kind of in full flight. What's your check-in, your kind of big-picture thoughts on the Canucks through eight games so far?
Really accurate with the way that the coach describes it. The record is a little bit misleading. So two things. First of all, when you get to be a pretty good team and you're living on the margins occasionally, your results will get you points. Like your team, your pedigree elevates and you're gonna walk into some points. Now, they have had to come back in games. I get that. You know, even the other night against Carolina, and show some character that way. But honestly, guys, there's some lapses in the lineup where they're very, very close to teetering on some margins that just don't make any sense, to be perfectly honest. And if you don't mind, I want to share a couple of them to you with you, because I was looking at, you know, Jake DeBrusk, for example. So if you believe in analytics and you believe in metrics and all this other stuff, like for me, it's a results-driven business, so I'm all about the results. How you get there, sometimes I really don't care. It's you know, the result that matters the most. But having said that, Jake DeBrusk is in the top third of the league in terms of the way he plays the game with pace. So with and without the puck, Jake DeBrusk is in the top third of the league playing with pace. He's below 50%. He's on the bottom tier of the league with generating actual shots on goal, and 9 out of 10 have come from right out front the net. He doesn't have a single offensive scoring chance off the rush with the puck on his stick. That's alarming to me. Like, I couldn't believe it. I had to do the double take and go down and start breaking down video. I'm talking about, you know, a high danger or something that the goaltender had to make a significant save. Or even if you went far post where the goalie's got to kick one out for a rebound, you know, it's like a quasi two-on-one that way. So it's like there's some good news there, and then there's some things that stand out. And that's an example. And you can go through the lineup and find, you know, examples of that. Keeper Sherwood's punching above his playing weight. Obviously, the statistics-wise and the way he's, you know, handling weight and playing physical. But what's curious about him is that I think he plays fast, and I love the way he's in the face of the opponent. He's a guy that's in small areas been exceptionally difficult to play against for opponents, and he's getting results that way. And then you just keep peeling the onion back. You know, by the time you get down to Pettersson, you know, Pettersson is, you know, yes, he's on the mark now with a goal, but his number, his metrics, his underlying metrics are way down even compared to last year. So that's what I'm talking about. They're living on the margins. They're getting points, but there's some anomalies here.
The DeBrusque thing is fascinating to me, Books, because, you know, throughout his career, he's been a really reliable source of shot volume. You know, you at least are going to get sort of, and you can almost set your watch to it across his career in Boston. You're going to get, you know, something like 7 shots an hour from him year in, year out. He's done it whether or not he was in the coach's doghouse or playing on a line with Marchand and Bergeron. Oh, my goodness. It was always going to be the same. 7 shots an hour, set your watch to it. And yet this year, it's like 3. Like, it's actually fallen off across his first 8 games, and I kind of can't figure out why, because when I watch him play, he still looks pretty good to me. Like, he's still passing the eye test. It's just there's not a lot happening there.
Yeah, so I'm with you 100%. If you even watch the other night, like on Jack Roslovich's goal the other night, if you watch that sequence, so the puck goes down low, Hughes ends up pinching or activates anyways in the offensive zone off the puck. And like DeBrusque is playing smart. Like, he gets above the play. He's, you know, he's doing his job defensively. It's not a great look, the goal, because it ends up being him and Hronek on kind of like a 2-on-2 with Roslovich coming late off the rush. But the fact of the matter is, hey, I got to be there to be above the play. We don't have control. I got to defend. I have to be around it down low. I have to push the play, you know, with my speed. So, yeah, the eye test absolutely looks like it's pretty good. But when you really start drilling down on everything, there's not a ton getting done. You're absolutely 100%. So, correct. So I'm looking for that to improve a great deal based on the fact that I don't feel like he's not competing. I don't feel like he's not a potential factor going forward with more offense. I think it's there. So maybe it's just that first 10-game segment, guys, with the new group and trying to get used to, you know, new line mates and a bunch of different things.
You know, that point you made, Jason, about the no rush chances for DeBrusque is really fascinating. And as you said, you know, that's a strength of his game. It certainly has been in his career. And I think it's a big part of the reason the Canucks wanted to bring him in, right? Because we know they want to be a more dangerous team off the rush. But it's also the kind of thing where the rush is a team game thing, right? Like, the whole team has to be involved in it and has to be working to generate those chances. DeBrusque isn't going to be able to do it on his own. So it almost seems like kind of a situation where one of his strengths is the rush, but the team as a whole isn't generating those chances right now. And that's going to have a big impact on DeBrusque's production.
I agree with that too. I think that it starts below your goal line, depending on when you get possession of the biscuit. So you know, as a winger, as you guys all know, generally speaking, if it's a quick hit, you're from a standstill. So you're not in motion yet. So you're not necessarily going to lead it. But depending on the sequence, if he's helping out, let's say he's F1 on the back check for whatever reason. He's the first guy back. And now the Canucks turn it over. The puck should be on his stick and he should be going north with it. So there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of different little intricacies of the game that have led to him not having it on his stick very much, and it's curious because, again, guys like Keeper Sherwood and some of these other guys, I feel like they've actually had it on their stick more. So I think the law of averages should work itself out in time, but it is an observation. And you know, as the games, we get to game 20, game 30, let's remember this conversation and take a look back on it, because absolutely, come playoff time, as we all know, last year, the depth of the roster and the way that they wanted to push it as they started to get momentum in playoffs, they need those extra layers. And hopefully he'll get more comfortable in time. And there's a lot of positives there. I'm not knocking him off the perch. I'm just saying that I'm breaking down the roster, trying to think about the margins and how close, because when you have 3 overtime points already in 8 games, you're living on the margins, right? Those could have easily been losses. And I mean, if Freddie Anderson doesn't go swimming for a puck the other night with 3 minutes left in the game, which is insane, you know, that's a loss. That's an overtime, potentially a regulation time loss. So, Yeah, no, they're good enough to just get by, but there's got to be another level to the group.
Another player that I think has started to come under the microscope here is Carson Soucy on the blue line. And, you know, at times it's been kind of dissatisfaction with the Soucy-Myers pair, but also I think with Carson Soucy individually. And, you know, with the way this blue line is built currently, he's taken on a big responsibility. You look at it, he should really be their number three defenseman after Hughes and Hronek, and the results haven't been pretty so far. What looks different for you in this eight-game sample from Carson Soucy than what he was doing when he was effective for the Canucks last season?
Execution has been not on time, and I'm talking about whether he has the puck on his stick or whether he's jumping to space. Like, Carson Soucy has length, and so when you have the type of length he has, you don't have to necessarily be physically punishing all the time, but you have to arrive somehow and then retreat as well back to protect the house on time. And so on the defensive side of it, it's been uneven for me offensively, and just as puck execution, you know, moving the puck. Obviously, he's not producing any points. He's really not getting any pucks to the net. And that's fine. You know, I'm not suggesting for a second that the Canucks necessarily need that, but this isn't even a guy that pinches down to extend a play and work like a high-low cycle. Like, that's just not part of the equation. It's just details, guys. For me, it's been a slow burn out of the gate for him. The read and react, the just not concise enough. And I know that sounds super simple, but that's exactly what it's just. Again, he actually fits the mold of the team, living on the margins. He's a better player than what he's shown so far. But at the same time, his ability to take away time and space and execute with the puck and defend properly out front is not too many times I've seen him, and all of them have been kind of guilty of this at any time, but too many times I've seen around the net where we're not neutralizing the stick or the body, and it's leading to grade A chances against, and he's got to be better, and he will be. He's a better player than what he's shown.
We were talking about it in the first segment, Books, because this team's doing well. They have points in seven of their eight games. They just concluded a four-game win streak with a loss to Carolina, who's an elite team. And even in that loss, they managed to battle back from a two-goal deficit in the third period, even if they were fortunate to get the point. There's a lot that feels like we should be, in this market anyway, talking about this team in, you know, sort of excited, optimistic tones. And yet, whether it's because of Pettersson struggling or the weight of higher expectations or Thatcher Demko uncertainty or whatever it is, it feels like there's something off in terms of the vibes that the market is reacting to. What do you get? What are you getting from this team when you watch them play at the moment?
Well, the bar's been raised. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, the bar's been raised. So when you start looking at players like, even we just talked about Soucy at dash five playing 20 minutes a night, you know, the market is a hard market, but they're not a dumb market. They know that we're getting points and we look pretty good most of the time, but there's also times that we look, you know, horrific. Well, that's probably an exaggeration, but you get my drift. Like, it's a smart market that way. The expectation, the bar's gone up. Again, back right to the back first of our conversation here, they're getting by on being a good team right now to get the results. Because 2 years ago, the points in overtime or these comebacks, and they were an anomaly. They spiked a little bit when they made a coaching change midway through the season a couple years ago. But on balance, they were losing these points. Right now, they're a team that's good enough to get these points in situations that maybe they haven't been the best of the version of themselves. But it's very uneven. Like, it takes 2 seconds for anybody to look up the statistics of the defense. And if you want to go through it, like anybody, like Hughes plus five, Myers minus two, Ronick plus five, Brännström, nice surprise, yep, plus five. But then it goes Desharnais minus one, Juulsen, who plays as hard as he can when he plays, and then Soucy minus five. So you see all those numbers, how they're all over the place. It looks like a heartbeat, right? So it speaks to the version of the group right now. It's not, they haven't all been the best version of themselves together as a unit quite yet. And they better not, like, the first 5 minutes the other night, guys, they are getting outshot 5-1 on home ice the other night by Carolina in the first 5 minutes. You got to start on time. Like, Jersey's coming in. Jersey's a quick straight a quick strike group, and they'll hurt you. So you better be ready to go right out of the box.
All right, let's get into some of the prospects that I know you've been digging into for the Canucks, Jason. And we'll start with the player I think Canucks fans most interested, the prospect anyways, to monitor this year. He just scored his first AHL goal of the season last night. Jonathan Lekaramäki, what's your early? Now, he's only played three games. He missed some time with illness to start the season. But what's your early read on Lekaramäki?
Yeah, so obviously a good training camp, missed a couple of weeks. I don't know what the illness is or was. You guys would know better. But obviously he's just getting started there in Abbotsford. Over 19 minutes of time on ice, even strike power play, playing to his identity down there to start. You know, so he's ripping pucks from the flank. Actually, he's rotating up top off the cycle at even strength as well. That's how he scored his goal. Or I don't even got a goal or an assist off. It doesn't matter. It, offensively, it's fine. I like his pounce, and I liked how he was getting pucks. He's been super aggressive already getting pucks to the net. He had 10 shots on goal the other day in the second game back against the Ducks top affiliate team. The thing, though, guys, is it's when you stop and go in pro hockey. So offensive zone exits, half wall exits, you know, all those little things. And I'm going to sound redundant when I start talking about prospects that way, but there's no time to stand and watch. You have to think a play ahead, and that'll come. He's only just kind of getting his feet wet again here. But so far, playing to his identity, he's fine. He does look a little light, even lighter to me right now. But on balance, he's tracking in the right direction.
Tom Volander, Books, is producing. Now, he's producing, but does the tape match it? Is the puck handling a little sharper? Well, no. I mean, BU puts up so many goals. You know what I mean? Like, point per game for a defenseman at BU doesn't mean what it used to mean, right, Books?
Oh, listen, buddy. This is a fascinating one. So, I know you were on to this last time we talked about it, and you're absolutely right. So, he's coming off Defender of the Week, Defenseman of the Week in college hockey or Hockey East there. He's playing a load. Like, so 22.5 and 24.5. When you go into North Dakota as a college player, as a visiting team, anybody who's ever watched college hockey, like in the Ontario Hockey League here where I live in London, you know, you come to London, there's 9,000 people a night here to watch the London Knights. You know, sometimes in the Western League, you're going to go into places like Portland, Everett, huge crowds. North Dakota is a super hard place to play for visiting teams.
Yep.
Game-winning goal in overtime. So here's the thing about Willander. Point of game so far, on balance, the optics look great. But let me tell you, his defending to get out to the flank and then return to cover the house and observe what's happening around him, there's a little bit of a timing issue going on there. Mm. It's subtle. It's subtle, and people might not notice it, but nerds like me, we notice these things, and we say to ourselves, that's a problem that's going to have to be corrected. It might even just be a shoulder check. It doesn't matter, but I'll give you an example. If you lose a ball, if you go out and defend the half wall and the hash marks, he's a right shot, and especially if he's on his weak side, and they cycle the puck back up. Now, if you look to where the puck goes, instead of getting in front of your man and fronting your man, he's to the crease before you have a chance, and you're staring at his numbers. When they cycle it up top, they get it to the net in that lane, and you're staring at his numbers, you're in trouble. So there are some small details I need for him to improve. It's been adequate defensively, but not to the level that I need it to go to going forward. But the rest has been good. Puck execution, again, you know, there's times I wish it was a little bit better, but on balance, when you play 25 minutes a night, like there's sometimes Hughes turns it over to guys, and you're not going to knock him all the time. When you play that much, it is what it is sometimes.
Yeah, for me, though, Books, when I've seen him play in the past, it's been more about awareness, thinking the game as an attacking player, and literal mechanics of handling the puck. How does he look in those two areas?
I'm fine with him. He's walking the line better. He's opening up lanes better. He's not super, super crisp moving the pill. Like sometimes, you know, when you see really good passers and they really rip it, he's not getting over it. It's like he identifies it. We're just a second off, and you got to make it a little bit quicker, a little bit harder. So those are little details that I'm monitoring from now until the end of the year, because my anticipation it's early to start talking about it, but my anticipation is this is a kid that turns pro at the end of the year, and those will be his challenges there. Similar to like Patterson, who's playing down in Abbotsford right now, he's a different type of player, but those are the challenges, right? Those little areas.
Another defenseman of note for Canucks fans, this one in the AHL, Elias Pettersson, his first full North American pro season. I know you've been pretty high on this player in the past. I think he's caught the attention of a lot of Canucks fans as well. What are you seeing from him so far?
He can't teach pit bull, and I do believe this kid is that. And he has a veteran sort of presence about his game in Abbotsford, even though he's a young player. Even strength and penalty kill, over 19 minutes a night, blocking shots, fronts it pretty well, leans on people in the trenches. He'll box out. He's definitely got a little bit of a streak to him to be mean. I love that about him because that's how he's going to get by. He's just a two-way D at the NHL level. He's got to have bite. He's got to have pushback. He's got to be hard to play against. And he's going to open up space for more of a whirling dervish, like maybe him and Willander somewhere down the line play together in a Canucks uniform where Willander can go, where Pettersson, you know, protects the house a little bit more. Again, though, guys, it's a move it quicker, react a little bit quicker thing for him at times, and that's going to come. He's not pure with the puck right now, and I'm monitoring that because coaches don't always – we just talked about, you know, guys like at the NHL level, the DeBrusque of the world. You got to go tape the tape. You got to get it there on time. You got to launch the attack. And all of that is read, react, and make a play with the puck. So I love his compete. He's absolutely leaning on people. He's hard to play against. It's just timing, and it'll come. He'll be okay. But there are a couple of times, even on the weekend, he got caught up in the neutral zone on a goal against. I can't remember which one it was right now, but he got caught, you know what I mean, kind of watching for a second, flat-footed, and then, you know, the opponent's off to the races.
Does Pettersson look like he could put himself in a position to be a potential recall option as early as later this year, or is that a little too aggressive for him at this point?
I'm not going there right now. Personally, I'm not. There's some timing issues that he's going to be exposed. Could it improve? Absolutely. Like by the time he got the World Juniors with the national team and when he was playing pro in Sweden, it was a slow burn for him until it was like, okay, boom, he's got it. So I think he's going to be one of those kids that arrives and gets it right. It's just he's just not there for me right now.
All right, last prospect that I know you wanted to talk about, or at least that you've been doing your research on, and a little more off the radar, although he was, I believe, the team's first selection at this most recent draft, albeit in the third round, Melvin Fernström playing in Sweden, the winger. What are you seeing from Melvin, Books?
I figure we might as well give our listeners some of these European guys that they have, you know, they can't track them, right?
Yep.
So Melvin Fernström is playing at Arebro in Sweden. He's splitting time between the SHL team and the J20 team, most of the times with the J20. When he plays in the SHL, it's less than 8 minutes a night, and it's not quality ice. It doesn't allow him to play to his identity. He was their first pick last year in the fourth round. The kid absolutely rips pucks. Like, when he gets time and space, it's bar down. He can shoot it in motion. The problem with Melvin is that he has got to keep his feet moving. And I'm talking about in all three zones, whether it's working. They don't cycle it as much along the wall in Europe just because they have so much time and space. But he needs to start moving. He's relying on people getting him the puck on the flank, and he'll rip it. But when you regroup in the neutral zone or you track back 200 feet, he did score a great goal against Vasteros last week off the rush, bar down. But again, it's for him, for me, the message would be, buddy, we need you to be playing quicker, faster, anticipating more often, because time and space is valuable in pro in North America. Then your element will speak for itself.
So with a forward like Fernström, right? So 93rd overall. So, you know, mid round, not super high pedigree, but not, you know, sixth or seventh round lottery pick either. And his draft plus 1 year, he's playing in Sweden, as you said, kind of splitting between, you know, the senior league and the U20 league. How difficult is it to kind of judge the progress he's making in those circumstances? What qualifies as a successful season and progress for a player like that?
Well, if you want to, obviously he was drafted a lot later than Lekkerimäki, but if you want to body him up against a player like that, like the end goal is the NHL, right? So mm-hmm. whether you're a first rounder or sixth rounder, it doesn't matter. So if you want to compare the two and their trajectory, he was a draft plus one. So Lekkerimäki started to hit more right away at the same age as Bernstrom right now. I would like to see the statistical profile go to a way higher level at the J20 level. He's had some success on the international stage. I'm curious to see just what his trajectory is the rest of the year. But it's been average plus for me. And it, again, I'll come back to it. It just starts with moving your feet more. So that would be the message for him to be playing, to be more activated all the time in all three zones. Don't stop moving your feet. And but I think it's going to be a little bit of a slow burn. But I'll tell you, boy, when he does figure it out, and I hope he does, you can't teach what he does with the puck, like the way that he shoots it and rips it. But is it going to be a European player in the SHL long term, or is he going to figure it out to come over here? Time will tell.
Books, awesome stuff, man. Really appreciate it. Great insight into the prospects, and we'll do this again next week.
Awesome, boys. Enjoy the games this week, and thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. That is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL director of amateur scouting as well, giving us the Melvin Fernstrom update here on Sportsnet 650. We'll take a break in just a second here. We'll do the whiteboard to wrap the show up in the final segment. Just before we do that, though, I'm going to throw it to producer Dom Shermati, who I know has an important message he wants to get out. Dom.
We have a missing persons report here. Joseph Maku, dark-skinned, 18 years old, 200 pounds, 6'5", was last seen on October 22nd near 96th Avenue and 128th Street, wearing a black hoodie, black sport bottoms, and black and white basketball shoes. If you have any information that can help us find him, please call the missing persons line at 604-599-0502. That's 604-599-0502. Thank you.
Thank you, Dom. We'll take a break. The whiteboard in the final segment here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.